powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Every single weekday leading up to free agency, we're going to be doing our free agent profiles. Now, we're going to start by looking at the pending Seahawks free agents, whether or not Seattle should re-sign them, what they brought to the Seahawks, how much they could be asking for. That continues today with linebacker KJ Wright.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Free agent profile.
Now, this is one of the bigger names that's going to be hitting free agency for the Seahawks. In addition to Chris Carson, who kicked off our free agent profile list. Again, you can check that out at 710sports.com on the Jake and Stacy podcast page. If you missed it, we've also got Benson Mayoa for day two. Today, it's KJ Wright. And few things, Jake, get better with age. Wine, scotch, cheese, those are a few of them. But KJ Wright might also be one of them. That's actually better as an analogy alone because Wright's actually always been pretty good. But critics certainly expected him to drop off when he turned 30. Instead, he's strung together two of the better seasons of his career. His 132 tackles in 2019 were the most of his career, and his 11 tackles for loss in 2020 were the second highest of his career. He has been a stalwart of the Seahawks defense and of the Seahawks team. Now, with at 32 years old, heading into the 2021 season, he's currently 31. He'll turn 32 in July. He is the longest tenured Seahawk on the roster. He has a chance to end his career in Seattle being a career Seahawk, but of course that'll only happen if A, he retires right now, which it certainly doesn't sound like he's going to, or B, if the Seahawks re-sign him in free agency, because right now he is an unrestricted free agent, and he has shown no real signs of slowing down, at least not in total production. Would certainly be a valuable veteran to any defense anywhere in the league. But is the Seattle Seahawks defense, one that drafted a linebacker with their first round pick a year ago, going to bring him back?
Well, KJ Wright certainly has made his case for the Seattle Seahawks to make a priority to return him back here in a Seahawks uniform yet again. And here, as you'd mentioned, the later part of his career, after the 2018 season, there was real question about whether the Seahawks were going to bring him back, particularly him coming off of one of the hardest seasons of his career, where he had suffered a really bad knee injury that kept him out for the majority of the season, only came back with the team for the very last couple games and into the playoffs. But the Seahawks trusted in KJ Wright. They brought him back, and as you said, he had responded extremely well with two very productive seasons at will linebacker. And in 2020, that you saw this interesting transition from, you know, drafting Jordan Brooks, trying to get him on the field, find a role for him, and yet still play KJ Wright. And the big change in terms of KJ Wright's career at this point, I believe, is when Bruce Irvin went down with a serious knee injury. And when he went down with that knee injury at the Sam linebacker position, it forced Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. to really have to think through how they were going to solve this problem. And the answer was to move KJ Wright from his traditional position of will linebacker, the position that he had played for 9 seasons in this league and been extremely successful at. They moved him to the edge, moved him to Sam linebacker, and I believe this was the absolute right move because he thrived. And KJ Wright, being of 31 years old, going to be turning 32 this year, he is not the speed demon, the guy with tremendous range that he initially came in with into this league. But with his savvy veteran presence, I think has allowed him to really make big plays and to think before the play has even happened. And here in cut number 8, let's just walk through some of these big plays. How about the time he de-cleated fullback from the 49ers?
Wilson wings on the right side, empty backfield for Beathard, who's going to throw it underneath, and boom, making the catch is Juszczyk. And he is knocked on his wallet by KJ Wright. Great shoulder tackle. Juszczyk pops up off the ground. Those two kind of go face mask for a second, exchange pleasantries, and then go back to their respective huddles.
That was one of the biggest hits that I've seen in KJ Wright's career, and he had a handful of those. But one of the other things that he did so well at the Sam linebacker position wasn't just the hits, wasn't just his physicality in the run game and setting the edge. It was the fact that he did a really good job in pass coverage as well, getting out into the flat. And here in cut number 9, him actually getting a one-handed interception.
Cousins is going to roll right. He's going to look. The ball is intercepted! KJ Wright reaches up about 13 feet in the air and pulls it down. What a play by number 50. He had three of them a shot at last week and didn't bring one in that time. A fabulous one-handed interception by the Spider, KJ Wright. What a big play in the Seahawks again in scoring territory against the Vikings.
Such a good play.
Yeah, awesome, awesome play. And with all those things being said, and you bring all that to the table, the other aspect that you have to put into this equation is how great of a leader KJ Wright is. I mean, we talk about Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Dwayne Brown. KJ Wright is one of those guys in that locker room that is a commanding presence, is a leader who knows exactly how to get it done at this stage, and is honestly one of the best teammates I have ever been around. Just genuinely cares about everyone around him, goes out of his way to make sure everybody is good, is okay, is comfortable. And if you have any questions, he is there for you. So just having his presence alone in that locker room means a lot. But when you bring his play into it, it's certainly a guy that I know that the Seahawks are going to desperately want to bring back. And quite frankly, Stacey, when it's all said and done, I think KJ Wright is in a Seahawks uniform yet again, and he finishes out his career as a Seahawk. Reason why is because although he's had two very good seasons last year, changing to Sam linebacker, kind of revitalizing his career a little bit, he did not play every single down. He is not an all three down type of linebacker in the league anymore. He is a first, second down type of linebacker, and those specialty type of players don't get paid the big dollar amounts that KJ Wright might be accustomed to getting, or, you know, being in that conversation, you know, talking with teams about. So I think that his price range is going to be one where the Seahawks can afford him and can bring him back, and I think that they make it a priority too.
Now, when you're looking at some of KJ Wright's strengths, especially as he becomes an older player, I don't think he's physically fallen off at all. Do things become harder? Yes, we've heard Doug Baldwin talk about recovery taking all week versus a day or two as you inch closer to your 30s or into your 30s. However, I think that idea that once you get the three in front of your age as a player, you just completely drop off is a little bit dated. There are many players that have proven us wrong, proven that they can keep playing a little further into that 30 to the mid-30s age, with kind of 35 being probably the oldest player in the locker room in any given room. But KJ Wright, 31 years old, he'll be turning 32. And when you think of the most impressive play defensively from the Seattle Seahawks win at home against the Arizona Cardinals, what do you immediately think of? KJ Wright containing Kyler Murray?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, that would be one of the first that come to mind.
Now, when I'm thinking of that, I think of that as one of the most impressive defensive plays from that game, because it also takes a lot of savvy. It also takes
just
perfectly executed technique, kind of fighting against instinct in a way that I have to know exactly what this player might do. I have to know exactly how to play this thing before, because I've been there before, and that's exactly what KJ Wright did. Is he always going to be able to outrun every tight end, or God forbid if you're bit on directly on a wide receiver? No, you're not. But you're going to be able to, when veteran savvy becomes a little more important than just physical prowess, be able to get the upper hand. And that's a perfect example of that. And when you're looking at some of the strengths of some of the offenses you're going to face right now, whether it's a spread offense or whether it's an offense, especially in the NFC West, where you're going to have guys spreading out the run game, or a mobile quarterback with Kyler Murray, I think that's incredibly useful.
Right. And that's where I believe this transition to Sam linebacker ultimately was the best thing that happened to KJ, because he doesn't need to play in space as much as you do at will linebacker. The ability to run sideline to sideline is so critical at that will linebacker position. And guess what, Stacey? In this cover three type of coverage that Pete Carroll runs, the Will linebacker is incredibly important as a not only as a run stuffer, but as a guy who can be very, very dynamic in pass coverage as well. And I think in the early stages of this season, this past season, KJ Wright was playing a lot of Will linebacker, and he was getting exposed a little bit in pass coverage. They move him to Sam linebacker. He is forced to play on the edge, forced to contain the edge, does a great job with that, became very aggressive, almost like his younger version of himself at the line of scrimmage and with the run game. But he also was able to cover an area in zone coverage that he could realistically do and not have to cover so much space. So overall, this was a great transition for him, and he responded extremely well to it.
Now, I end with the same two questions for every one of these profiles. Jake, number one, money. Number two, what do you do if they leave? So number one, what kind of contract might KJ Wright be looking for? And you could ballpark it or just say like whether or not the Seahawks would feasibly be able to afford it. Question number two, what does the linebacker group look like? Your starters, in base formation, your starters, if KJ Wright leaves.
Yeah, I would probably, when it comes to KJ Wright, I would imagine that you're talking about a two-year deal worth anywhere from, I would say, $12 to $14 million. So I think that you're looking at, you know, anywhere from $6 to $7 million average salary for KJ, and that's where I kind of think he's at this stage of his career. So we'll see what ends up happening here. But I do think that the Seahawks are going to make a priority to bring him back. I think you'll see him in a Seahawks uniform next year because he still has a lot to bring to the table. And I think that in this year, when you're trying to keep it, the entire band together, I think KJ Wright is a huge, huge piece to that puzzle.
Now, do you have, so you'll have Jordan Brooks, you'll have Bobby Wagner on the inside. What would be options if KJ Wright, you're expecting him to come back, you're saying, look, I am expecting KJ Wright to be in a Seahawks uniform in 2021. Fingers crossed, I think that's what a lot of fans are hoping for too. KJ Wright has been a longtime fan favorite, and you rarely in any major league right now get players who spend their entire career with one given team. It would be such a pleasure to have a player in Seattle do that. So if KJ Wright were to leave, are you looking at Cody Barton, Ben Burkervin, someone from the outside stepping in there?
No, it would definitely be Cody Barton who would be the guy that would have to step in. And he played that role his rookie year. And, you know, he had his ups and downs playing that role. And now Cody Barton is going to be in year three of his NFL career. And so maybe he is ready for that challenge. Maybe he is ready to take that on. But I think that, you know, at least for another year, at least, I think the Seahawks want to see KJ Wright holding down the edge yet again.
All right. That is our free agent profile on Jake and Stacy. So far, we've done Chris Carson, Benson Mayowa, and today it was KJ Wright. A brand new free agent profile coming your way tomorrow at 1 p.m. For any of the free agent profiles you've missed, including Carson and Mayowa, you can check them out on our Jake and Stacy podcast page, wherever you download your podcasts, or you can go to 710sports.com. Click on the podcast page and check out Jake and Stacy. That'll be in hour three, beginning every hour three. Right now, it's time for NFL headlines. The Broncos have not decided yet what they'll do with Von Miller's $18 million option for 2021. Jake, you already know what I'm going to ask you.
Are the Seahawks going to get Von Miller?
Yes, Jake, that's what I'm asking you.
The answer is no, it's not. But gosh, would it be awesome?
It'd be great.
It would be great. But this is a stage for Von Miller at his career where he's still a very good, productive player. He's not the elite edge rusher that he used to be, but certainly could join a team that has a good pass rushing unit and still be extremely, extremely good. So with this, the Broncos, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense other than the fact of, look, Von Miller is a legend in that Broncos organization. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about KJ Wright, how great it would be to have a player like him finish his entire career as a Seahawk, the Denver Broncos are thinking the same thing with Von Miller.
Right.
And they would love to have Von Miller still remain a Bronco for life. But the reality of where they're at and where their franchise is at is they're in the rebuilding phase. They are not ready to compete for Super Bowls or even playoff contention, in my opinion. And so what I imagine they'll do is that they'll probably not accept the $18 million option for Von Miller. They will try to restructure a deal. They will try and get Von Miller for an inexpensive price point rather than $18 million. But I don't know what Von Miller's response is going to be to that. And that part of it is going to be curious to me. Is does he want to dip his toe into the water of free agency and see what else is out there and see if he can put himself and attach himself to a winning organization that is ready to compete? And if I'm Von Miller, I think that's what I would want to do, unless I'm just so attached to the Broncos organization because they've treated you so well. I could see that being the case, but every great player like Von Miller is going to want to go after another Super Bowl ring.
Speaking of staying with an organization for life, Pittsburgh GM Kevin Colbert says they haven't decided yet on restructuring a deal with Ben Roethlisberger. Big Ben carries a $41 million cap hit in 2021, goodness. Cut 17. Here's Kevin.
He reiterated that to us, that he wants to continue to play. And we told him, quite frankly, we have to look at this current situation. You know, Art Rooney addressed that with Ben's current cap number, some adjustment will have to be made. And we're not negotiating as we sit here and answer this question. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is on a team. Ben Roethlisberger did a lot of really good things last year, and we anticipate that he could still do some good things moving forward. So hopefully there's a way that we can try to figure out and do what's best for the organization and do what's best for Ben. And hopefully he'll be able to see that and feel the same way we do. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Guys, imagine Ben Roethlisberger entering the circus that already exists in quarterback carousel this offseason.
I don't think he would. I don't think Ben would be a part of the mix. You want to know why? Because I think Ben Roethlisberger would retire. I don't think that he plays another down in a different uniform. The only place that makes sense for him is the Pittsburgh Steelers at this stage of his career, because Ben is also really compromised physically. He does not have the same physical abilities that he once had. I mean, this last year he was surrounded with a bunch of great talent. They were very committed to throwing the ball, but doing it in a way that didn't expose Ben Roethlisberger downfield. And you're kind of in a Drew Brees situation where you know this guy is on the tail end of his career. What's the upside? Right. And then the next thing that you have to figure out is, what is the downside? Are we significantly going to hurt ourselves if we don't have talent behind him that we think that could compete, that could be a legitimate starter in the league for at least a year or two? And that we don't have this huge just peak and valley between our, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and the next guy that's going to be playing. And that's kind of the evaluation process that they have to go through right now, because the way that Kevin Colbert was talking about there, right, $41 million cap hit, there's no way that they're going to take that on. There's no way they want Ben Roethlisberger to be their quarterback if that's going to be the case. And quite frankly, I think that they are slow talking and slow shooing their way into trying to convince Ben, like, hey, man, it's probably better if you retire.
Now, listen up, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line and listeners, 710-710, by the way, to join that conversation. At 1:45, I will be asking you guys to send in your questions. Actually, you can send them in any time, but at 1:45, we're going to be having our question segment, What I Need to Know, where you send in any question you have. But I have a question for you guys right now, and both you, Jake, and you, Curtis. Who is the ultimate GOAT in sports? NFL.com, no surprise here, says it's Tom Brady, but quite a few people have taken issue with that, pointing to Michael Jordan, Serena Williams, Michael Phelps, Simone Biles, and, of course, Bill Russell. My question for both of you guys, welcoming answers from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, too, who is the ultimate GOAT in sports?
The ultimate GOAT?
GOAT.
To me, there are four that should be of this conversation.
I'll allow a Mount Rushmore of GOATs.
Michael Jordan, Serena Williams, Michael Phelps, and Tom Brady. Those four.
No,
to
Bill
me,
Russell.
And you could maybe even throw in Tiger Woods if you wanted to. Like those are pretty special to me. I don't think Bill Russell was part of that equation. I think he's a tremendous winner, but I don't think he's the greatest basketball player to ever play the game.
Fair.
Different era, different time. Also, there weren't nearly as many teams in the NBA at that time. So it's not to diminish anything that Bill Russell did. I think he was one of the best to ever play the game, but his era also, I think, was an era where it allowed him to be as great as he was and to win as many championships as he was. But ultimately, if I had to pick who the ultimate GOAT was, I mean, it's going to come down to Michael Jordan or Serena Williams for me.
Jake's saying, look, it's really tough to make GOAT Mountain. My standards are very high. You got to make sure you meet them. Not everyone gets to be on GOAT Mountain. Curtis, who is the ultimate GOAT in sports?
Man.
It's not a fun question to answer because no matter what you say, people are going to be like, no, it's Dale Earnhardt. No, it's Muhammad Ali. No, it's Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, I think Muhammad Ali would also be in that conversation as well. But looking at Michael Phelps, the staggering number of gold medals he won.
I know.
Just gold medals alone. He has won more gold medals than the next highest number of medals won by an individual Olympic competitor. He won 23 gold medals.
It's unreal.
The next highest is 18. He won 28 total medals. It's just stupid what he accomplished in those Summer Olympic Games over the course of, I believe it was four different ones.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Phelps, just a ridiculous amount of winning he did.
He's also got like a body that was made to be a swimmer.
Oh, yeah.
Like incredibly long arms, very like an upside down triangle, kind of broad shoulders. Like you were almost like engineered to be a swimmer.
I met Michael Phelps.
What?
Last year.
Why have you never told us this, Jay?
Yes.
Where did you meet him? Why did you meet him? What did you do? Are you friends
now?
Down in Cabo. Just casual.
He was down in Cabo working with Russ, and you know there's this this like locker room area in the place that we were staying at, and Michael Phelps was there, and he was transitioning from changing to going out on going out to the pool to go swim and go do a couple laps, and
take like
Michael Phelps and
Russ for him to do.
And Michael Phelps and Russ are our buddies and stuff, but the whole time I was sitting there next to Russ, standing there like, come on, man, play cool.
Being in a locker room next to Russell Wilson and Michael Phelps, and they're talking, and you're like, what do I do with my hands right now?
And he was extremely nice, got to, meet him, talk to him for a second, but, I mean, my gosh, I was like, this is unbelievable. I was literally watching Michael Phelps at one point swim laps in a pool. It was one of the coolest things I have ever seen.
Someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line saying, well, wait, did you know that Stacy saw Michael swim on TV? Yes, I did. You're right, Texter. I absolutely did. So Jake isn't the only one that has met or seen or watched a celebrity. I, too, have watched a celebrity. So you're not special, Jake. That's what I'm telling you. Now, is John Schneider going to pull off Frank Clark trade 2.0 to get more than four picks in this draft? Jake says no. I think I agree with him. And I think both of us will tell you that maybe your best talent this year shouldn't be coming from the draft at all. We'll tell you why next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Curtis, do you see any draft picks back there?
I think the Seahawks have lost a couple.
No, under the table? Anything over there? They've only got like four or five right now. I mean, they're really without a couple of them. Schneider know if you see any of them.
Maybe they're like in between couch cushions. Are there any couch cushions?
Check that, Curtis.
Typically at my house, there's all sorts of stuff between the couch cushions that Jackson and Bodie just kind of stick down there.
Old French fries.
That's right. Yeah.
Goldfish crackers, toys,
Lego pieces,
remotes.
Yeah.
Maybe there are draft picks there too, because the Seahawks suddenly are going to find themselves with among the fewest picks in the NFL draft this upcoming spring. We're looking at 4 to 5 based on the source you're looking at. For the purposes of this conversation, I'm going to go with 4. Now, last time they had this few draft picks, they traded defensive end Frank Clark to the Kansas City Chiefs for a first rounder and some. Now, the question was, all right, is John Schneider going to get a little restless? Is he going to want to do something to try to get more picks on the board this year? And we know John Schneider hates hates not having more bites at the apple. We know that as a GM, that is his motto. That's his MO heading into the draft. And they've found quite a few gems in late rounds by doing that. But, Jake, you are not expecting that to be the plan for this year.
No, I don't expect the plan to be a situation that they were in before. They were in this situation in 2019, heading into the 2019 draft, and lo and behold, John Schneider was not going to sit around and only have four picks going into that draft. What he did, he ended up trading Frank Clark away and acquiring significant draft capital that they then turned around and used to acquire more draft picks on draft day, and they ended up with 11. So they went from 4 to 11 that day.
Props to John Schneider. That was pretty insane.
And that crew, yeah, absolutely, for being able to pull that off. But it was all sparked by a trade with one of your best players. This year, however, I have a really hard time seeing the Seahawks go down that road, John Schneider going down that road. And the only trade pieces that you have that would be worth it, Bobby Wagner, Tyler Lockett, or Jamal Adams, you could throw in Quandre Diggs in there, maybe. I don't see the Seahawks parting ways with any of those guys. I think that this is a year where you are looking at this with COVID and the cap, you know, being what it is this year, and you are trying to find ways to keep this group together as much as possible. And that is why I believe that this year is going to be more about restructuring, extending contracts than anything else. And it's a situation that is unwelcomed. It's an unwelcomed approach based on the history of Pete Carroll, John Schneider, in the 11, 12 seasons that they've been together. But I think that also desperate times call for desperate measures a little bit when it comes to trying to create more cap space in 2021 to be able to make the adequate additions to improve your roster.
Now, let's talk about, first of all, where those picks went. And secondly, then what do you do for team building? For the first question, two of them go for that Jamal Adams trade. I know we all focused on the two first rounders, one in 21, one in 22, but you actually also traded a 2021 third rounder. So first rounder, a third rounder, write Jamal Adams' name next to them because that's what you gave up in addition to another first rounder in Bradley McDougald for your starting all-pro safety Jamal Adams. So where'd the other picks go? You traded a 2021 sixth rounder in last year's NFL draft to trade back into the seventh round and draft tight end slash wide receiver Stephon Sullivan out of LSU. He has since joined the Panthers, so he's no longer with you. So where'd that other pick go? You had a 2021 seventh rounder that you traded to Cincinnati in a package deal with center BJ Finney in exchange for pass rusher Carlos Dunlap. If you hang on to Dunlap, I'm going to go ahead and say that one is a win because he helped. He was a catalyst, essentially, for a mid-season turnaround for your pass rush. Ended up, I think, with five sacks, maybe a hair more, but ended up being a boon for your pass rush. Now, you can write Stephon Sullivan, Carlos Dunlap, Jamal Adams, accounting for collectively for those picks. You still got a couple on the board, but what if, Jake, the more important thing this year isn't necessarily the talent you get outside of your team, but the development of the talent you already have? Because if I'm John Schneider and I'm Pete Carroll, I'm looking at the guys that I've already drafted and I'm saying, you know what, Rashad Penny, your first round pick, let's make sure that you can be a reliable starter here. Let's make sure you can stay on the field. You know what, LJ Collier, your first round pick. Hey, Jordan Brooks, your first round pick. Hey, Marquise Blair, you get a little bit of a pass because you suffered an ACL tear. But Marquise Blair, you're a second round pick.
No passes, Stacey.
We got to make sure that these guys can continue to develop. Hey, Rasheem Green, you're a third round pick and still very young because we drafted you when you were 20. Again, in this case, I'm still John Schneider and Pete Carroll. So let's make sure we get you developing here. I mean, there are guys within your program that you need to lean on this year because when you don't have a lot to spend and you don't have a lot to use in the draft, you need to make sure that the picks you already made can pay off. Where is your investment right now? Where did your investment go? Check in on that.
You're 100% right, but the thing that I am fearful of, Stacey, is that those investments that you did make aren't going to pan out for you in the way that they need to in order to help you get to a Super Bowl. I mean, you're talking about LJ Collier taking that that other step. I hope he does.
Well,
I hope
that's
he has
a whole
I'm not entirely confident that there is going to be that entirely next step. Rasheem Green, I don't know. I mean, but that's the thing, is that you have the frontline talent to be able to get it done. You still need to be able to add a few more pieces to the puzzle here. And how do you do that? Do you do that via the draft, or do you do that by opening up more cap space and being able to acquire via free agency? John Clayton had an article on 710sports.com, and in his estimation, based off of the cap, he thinks that there will be 110 more free agents on the market than there currently are right now, just based off of cap casualties. So if you're in terms of a buyer's market this year, this is a pretty good year to be a buyer. And I think that that is the position that the Seahawks should be taking in. I don't think that they should be trading Bobby Wagner or Jamal Adams away this year if you feel like you have a very specific window in front of you, 2-3 year window right now that you can go and attack. You just need to add some legitimate talent, proven talent to your roster. I think that that's the best way that they can get it done.
All right. Coming up next, it's What I Need to Know. You guys know how it works, but I'm going to remind you, you text any question, you text what you need to know. You need to know right now. This question is just tearing you up inside. You got to get an answer. 710-710, busy, hard seltzer text line. Send it in now. We'll answer that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What I need to know, send your questions in. 710-710, busy hard seltzer text line from the 360. What I need to know, who wins the AL West this season with the Astros possibly on the down? I'm still going to say the Astros, but I'm going to bet money right now, Curtis, that the winner of the World Series is a National League team.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake.
I'm always rooting for the AL. Always. Always. But I do have to agree.
Yeah.
National League is
exactly right.
Yeah, probably going to take it.
When I need to know, who from 710 is the funniest? Well, that's an easy question. Texter from the 253, it's me. Jake, what's your answer?
Oh.
Ben Curtis.
Never right. Afraid to vote for herself.
Nope.
Ever.
Nope.
Always is going to shoot her shot, except for when it comes to some things.
Actually, but trying to shoot my shot. Oh, I know what Jake is saying.
I think that the funniest person at 710, Wyman, is pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even try to be.
He is he's effortlessly funny.
But hands down, it is Curtis Rogers.
What?
And it's not even close.
Okay. Wow.
Curtis Rogers is the funniest person on this
station. I guess if
far.
You like laughing and jokes in the traditional sense.
So, like, in an abstract sense, that's how they would like you?
If we're talking abstract, it's me.
Like, anti-jokes?
Yeah. Or just kind of, I guess, who laughs at their own jokes the most would probably be me.
Yeah.
Curtis, are you also going to vote for yourself for funniest?
No, I don't know. Funniest person, Wyman is definitely...
You can't vote yourself for funniest. It's a bad look.
You literally just did that.
I don't remember doing that.
You literally just did that. Oh, man. Funniest person. Danny's a volume shooter, but when he lands his,
yes,
it's good.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
I'm going to say, I think Wyman would get my vote.
Okay, I'll vote for Wyman, too. We have a unanimous vote for Wyman.
No, we don't have unanimous.
Oh, sorry, I forgot, Jake, but I overlooked that one. I'm so sorry. I need to know, if another NFC West team picked up J.J. Watt, would that apply more pressure on the Seahawks to address their offensive line?
If there isn't enough pressure right now, I don't know what is. There never will be enough pressure. You have Aaron Donald. You have two of the better defensive lines in the NFL within your own division. So, no, we do not need to add J.J. Watt to the equation. And you have Chandler Jones, who everyone forgets about, who unfortunately had a season-ending injury. He was one of the best sack artists in the NFL. So they've already been dealing with that for a couple years now, and nothing's really changed. So we'll see if that gets changed this year. I sure hope so.
Chocolate chip or macadamia nut cookie? Chocolate chip, it's not close.
I don't know, though. I mean, are we talking about like white chocolate chip macadamia nut or just macadamia nut? Because that's a big
just
difference.
Macadamia nut. They said just macadamia nut. They did not add white chocolate chip.
Okay. So with that, in that sense, technicality, I don't know many cookies that are just macadamia nut. Usually they're white chocolate chip macadamia nut. Therefore, that would win. But just out of macadamia nut and chocolate chip... Chocolate chip.
Thank you. Exactly.
I'm going to speak some truth out
Curtis,
there right
no,
now.
You're not. No,
okay.
You're not.
The most underrated fast food item is the Subway white chocolate macadamia nut cookie.
Okay, that is the truth, though. That is the truth. That
is the most underrated.
Yes. What's your favorite shoe brand? That's what they need to know. If it's Jordans, which ones?
Favorite shoe brand?
Well, mine are, I mean, I'm not going to resonate with a lot of listeners right now, but.
Oh, please say it.
Jimmy I'm partial.
Choo. Please.
Jimmy Choo, yeah, with my... Yeah, exactly. That's
make,
what I can definitely afford.
Here, yeah.
No, I think Steve Madden is a pretty decent mid-tier, mid-price brand. I
he
like
makes
Steve
a,
Madden.
He makes a good football video game, too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, wait, that's...
Yeah,
both
totally,
the football video
totally
games
can relate.
And the shoes.
Let's see. I would probably have to go with the Jordan 5s. Jordan 5s are typically my favorite. Although I do have a pair of Jordan 1s that I love and I wear frequently. But, yeah, that would be my pick.
If we're going Jordans, the 11s are probably the most popular Jordan ever. And I enjoy them. But I'm also going to say the Jordan 3s. Those are a nice look as well.
Okay.
The black cement Jordan 3s.
Yeah, I got you.
All right, next question. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to keep talking about the Jordans?
No.
We can move
totally
on now.
We can move on. Yeah,
I'm just not
that's
resonating
fine.
With me. I don't understand this question. What type of milk do you use on your cereal? I'm going to include.
What do you mean? Yes,
just
I mean,
milk?
How does? No, Stacey. There's 1%. There's 2%. There's vitamin D.
Vitamin D.
There's.
If I don't eat cereal,
there's whole milk.
I don't eat cereal. If I did,
skim
I would use
milk?
2% milk.
Okay, yeah, thank you for being a normal human being. Yes, 2% milk definitely is the best way to go with your cereal. Unfortunately, when I first got, when I first met my in-laws, tried to have cereal over at their house, and they only had 1% milk.
Ugh. It's like water.
I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. So 2%, 2% milk all the way.
Were you going to... Curtis, what's
I'm not a huge cereal guy. I'll go 2% as well. I mean, that's just kind of the standard operating procedure milk.
Ew! 206 said half and half. That's disgusting.
That's some thick.
That's intense.
Thick cereal.
That is disgusting.
Oh,
now, I thought
man.
He meant strawberry milk or chocolate milk.
No.
Oh. I think everybody kind of puts just regular old milk in their cereal.
I need to know what your favorite sandwich of all time is, and I also need to know who in your entire life made it the best. For example, mine is PB&J made by my brother. That's from the 206.
What did they do that made it so special?
I don't know. It's just, you know how sometimes, like, for instance, my mom makes really good, let's see, what does she make that's really good? She makes pretty good omelets. Oh, my mom makes the best waffles I've ever had in my life. That's not a sandwich, but let's just
Stacey,
switch it to any
we're talking about
food.
Sandwiches.
I know, but you could put stuff in between two waffles.
Hey, Curtis,
and make
what's
it
your favorite? What's your favorite sandwich? Waffles.
Wow, that's our waffles a sandwich. Our hot dogs a sandwich. That's the question. What if I said
a
hot dog right here? How controversial would that be?
I think that would be highly controversial.
Yeah.
Yes, but favorite sandwich? I would say a tuna melt. And my wife makes a bomb tuna melt, so I'm going to go with tuna melt. That's my favorite sandwich.
Curtis.
I'm going to say, man, a great sandwich, a turkey sandwich with like bacon on it as well. Oh, and avocado. I'm all about that. My wife makes a really good turkey sandwich.
Someone has, they have a couple more suggestions for funniest. Someone said Danny O'Neill is the funniest. We'll have to let him know.
Stacey, why aren't anybody texting and saying you?
Stacey,
I think it's just too obvious.
You know what great teammates do?
People are trying to be cool. What?
You know what great teammates do? They root for each other. They root for other people's success. They don't, just because it's not you doesn't mean you have to be upset about it.
Give me the ball. what I need to know, what is the first destination you will travel to with family and friends? I'm assuming the second half of this is when a lot of the COVID restrictions are done.
I'd love to just go to a game. Like, that'd be...
Going to a game will be awesome. You know, being able to do that will be great. And the other thing is, honestly, I mean, I don't know about everybody else out there, but wearing masks, they stink. So I am excited for the day where we can walk out and we can go into a store, we can go to a grocery store, whatever, go to work and not have to wear a mask, go on a airplane, not have to wear a mask. I will very much look forward to that.
This is disturbing to me. Someone texted in and said, from the 509, Wyman said nachos are a sandwich.
What?
Wow. That's
That doesn't that's make bold. Any sense. You can't just say something with a carbohydrate and other things in it. If it has a carbohydrate and a protein, it doesn't mean it's a sandwich. I'm offended. He's going to come in here in 2 seconds.
I mean, I guess it depends on your perspective. Like in a nacho.
No, Jake.
And you
no,
have,
Jake, stop.
You take two chips.
No.
And you.
No, Jake, stop trying to make it make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Well, you put the topping on one chip and then you add another chip to it. Put it on top.
No.
I mean, that. Is that a sandwich?
No, it's not a sandwich. It's just nachos. It's just you eating nachos. I'm going to fight with Wyman about this when he walks in here.
Well,
all right.
Good luck. We might not see you tomorrow.
He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. That'll do it for us today. Do not go anywhere, though, because Wyman and Bob is next. And Wyman trying to convince you guys that nachos are sandwiches. Just don't listen to him. Awful, awful take. That's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.